Welcome to Launch, where we explore the world of invention and entrepreneurship. I'm Jim DeBetta, here with my co-host, Ron Reardon, and our producer, Lee Cantor.
Hey,
good
Jim.
Morning.
How's Jim? Jim, how are you doing?
Doing good.
How was your Thanksgivings?
It was good. I don't think I ate enough.
You know, really? I got a ham.
You got lots of ham. Ham in the studio, ham at home.
It's everywhere.
Yeah, we went to Cajun Cookers up in Tennessee.
Yeah? Yeah. How was that?
It was delicious.
I had a Popeye's Cajun turkey.
Oh, really?
Yeah. We do it every year.
I've never been to Popeye's.
Really?
No.
That's impossible.
I think I've been once.
It's at the airport. You guys never go to the airport? It's the one with the long line.
The only thing I like at the airport, I like Cinnabons. That's my favorite. Like, if I'm in an airport, I love those things. I do. Yeah. I gotta admit.
I always hit Starbucks.
You don't like Cinnabons?
I don't.
The smell is better than,
so good,
than the taste.
Oh, they're the worst
taste.
Things for you, but
oh, yeah,
they are. I don't know, I just like
Yeah, this. I'm always disappointed with the taste, but the smell is great.
Yeah. Well, we have an exciting guest today, Vivian Horde. Good morning, Vivian. How are you?
Pretty good. Good morning.
Pretty good. Not very good, not excellent, not great.
I'm real good.
She's real good. Good. Vivian, you have a very interesting product called Catnap Kitties, and we're going to explore all about it, hear how you came up with the idea. But, I mean, for starters, you know, tell us about it, exactly what they are.
Well, Catnap Kitties are simulated robotic cats that are completely plush and soft that simulate the sound and feel of holding a real purring cat. Kids always want to hold a purring cat. And cats are not always cooperative. When my child was little, she thought the kitty said whenever she would try to catch it and hold it and love on it, it would run away. So
yeah, we would tell our nieces and nephews that it was sneezing, so not to hurt its feelings, and it was hissing at it.
So anyway, I decided that it might be nice to provide an alternative for children or other people who can't have a pet. For some reason, to create something that sounded and felt like a real cat. The other products on the market didn't sound real at all.
Now, do you know how many cat owners there are? Have you ever done that research?
No, I have never done that research. I read once that cats were the preferred, you know, domestic pet, but I don't recall the numbers.
Well, it's got to be tens of millions of cat owners. It's got to be.
Yeah, I know. I had a cat for almost 20 years. It was kind of half Persian and half Siamese. The Persian was from a good neighborhood, but the Siamese was kind of wandering through, was the story that I heard. And when my twin boys were born, the cat came in, saw the twin boys, and immediately started hissing. And, of course, my wife and I just shouted at the cat, you know, to let it know that, hey, these guys have got, you know, preference. And from that point on, you know, the cat was cool with the kids.
Well, that's good.
But as they got older, they would chase that cat everywhere.
I'm sure the cat enjoyed that.
Yeah. I mean, cats, you know, they can be, I would rather, I think, my dog bark or come after me than a cat. I mean, cats, I don't know, they scare me that way when they hiss and... Yeah. They bite on.
Well,
I don't know.
You know, my cat slept with me, okay, every night. And what would always get me is sometimes the cat would just come to full alert, okay, and look at me like, do you hear that?
Yeah.
And look around. Of course, then I wake up and my heart's racing, and then the cat would go back to sleep. And I'm sitting
like,
there.
Thanks a lot. You know?
And I'm staring at the ceiling.
And it was like nothing. Yeah.
Right.
The air conditioner blew a piece of paper somewhere.
Right. Well, Vivian, you know, I mean, I have four kids, and so we have and have purchased, you know, every imitation animal. I mean, we've got this one dog. It's like this, I don't even know what it's called. It's this huge mechanical dog.
It's a fur, is it one of the fur real dogs?
Yeah, that's what it is. Mm-hmm. It's fur real.
Fur real.
And it's pretty cool because it you could teach it little commands, or it has these built-in commands. So you could say sit or, you know, lay down. And for the most part, it actually works, but, I mean, it's a huge, huge thing. And my one son, my three-year-old, used to try to sleep with it in his bed. It's bigger than him, and it's heavy. So he would, like, you know, roll over, and it would just be like, you know, like he kept hitting it, and it's hard, you know, and it doesn't feel really soft to the core, you know.
Those kind of toys are interactive toys. They're meant to be played with.
Right.
And Catnap Kitties, There are things on the market that are already interactive toys. Hasbro has the Fur Real Kitty. You can pull its tail. It'll hiss. But it has a hard body to protect all the sensors for all the things that it does. Catnap Kitties are meant to be comfort toys. They're just for quiet times, reading, bedtime, watching television. If a child just wants to hold a cat and feel the comfort and the solace of that purr, that's what Catnap Kitties are for. It's a different type of product. It's not an interactive toy. Right. It's more of a comfort toy.
Right, and it's the purring is the special sauce here, right?
Right. I did do the research about the effects of a cat's purr on the holder. And I found out that there really is something to holding a cat and listening to the purr and feeling the purr that provides comfort.
Sure, I can. Nice,
I have the stats for the cat ownership now. I've been researching it. You
okay.
Ready?
Yes.
There's
Wait.
You want to guess?
80 million.
Well, now, how many dogs?
I would think there would be more dog owners.
72 million.
Wow, close race.
Dogs, 82
cats
million
win.
Cats.
Wow.
Then 43 million households own dogs, 37.5 million households own cats.
That's interesting. But there was more cats than dogs, right?
Right. The average number of dogs per household is 1.7.
Yeah.
And the average number of cats is 2.2.
Because I know the thing I liked about cats is they're less maintenance. Because there's a litter box, okay, and because you can put the food there and so that the water comes out automatically and unlike that. It's not like a dog that you got to let out or whatever and house train.
Right. They're much more self-sufficient, less needy.
That's right. Yeah. So how did you get the idea for this invention?
Well, we had a cat for 19 years that used to put my children to sleep. And he was a great cat. He's kind of like a dog, except my husband says he's more like a human. He knew exactly what the children needed, when they needed it, when they needed attention, when they needed to be left alone. I can remember when the kids were little and they would have ear infections, he would jump up on the bed while I'm trying to change a diaper and have a screaming baby with an ear infection, and he would just try to snuggle up next to their head and purr. And, you know, I'm thinking now maybe he was just trying to heal it because cat's purr also has healing properties for the cat. And I don't know what he was trying to do, but I know he was trying to soothe the child that was crying.
Yeah.
I can remember when we moved into our new house, it was my son's first night in his bedroom. And he was a little bit nervous because it's a new bedroom. And the cat went, and it was bedtime, and they both went upstairs, got in the bed. They both put their heads on the pillows and got under the covers.
Wow.
Went right to sleep.
Wow. So, here all these years, I've missed the secret of getting my kids to bed nicely, calmly when they're sick. I mean, just have the cat go in.
That's right.
You don't even need the cat now. No. You get this Catnap Kitty,
that's right.
And you're
done.
It's,
there's no question. I mean, I guess the purr is akin to, a mommy laying next to, a baby.
Right, the heartbeat.
Baby's heartbeat and stuff right. Like that.
I'm not sure what it is. I know when my mother had lung cancer, she recuperated at an Eden Alternative Facility, which is an elderly facility, they have pets. They have dogs and
okay.
cats. And Ms. Branton, the director there, said that it didn't matter if the person was unconscious. If the cat jumped on the bed with them and snuggled up with them, right next to them, the way a cat does, and started purring, that the person, even though they were unconscious, would have positive physiological responses.
Really?
Reduced labored breathing, reduced blood pressure. And I don't know if it's the feel of something human or the connection that does it. I really don't know what does it. But she did say that there was something to that.
Yeah, not everything needs an explanation. Sometimes things
just work.
I know that to put my twin boys to sleep, the routine we would do is first I would, massage their back to kind of get them to kind of unwind. And then we had this device called a sleep mate that kind of created white noise.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if the white noise from the sleep mate is similar to the purring of a cat,
It may be.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So, Vivian, I mean, you came up with this idea, but how did you go about doing something about that idea?
Well, first of all, I had to figure out how to make a purr sound. We can put people on the moon, but toys didn't sound like a real cat. They sounded irritating like a motor. And so I went to a lot of people to try to figure out how to make it. I went to computer people. I went to electronics people. And no one could figure out how to do it. And finally, one day, my computer guy said, "Hey, do you like practicing law?" And I said, "No, not really. I want to be a toy inventor." But I've got this issue. So he signed a confidentiality agreement, of course, and I told him the issue I was having. He goes, "Oh, my buddy Larry can help you with that." And luckily, Larry is an electronics wizard who loves cats. He and his wife have cats, and so he understood what I was trying to get. A lot of people who don't like cats, and I don't mean to say this in general because there are men who like cats, but they just weren't getting it. They weren't getting what I was needing. I needed a frequency that actually sounded real. And you know, when a cat purrs, it sounds like they're breathing in and breathing out with the purr. It's not a constant sound. It goes up and down in frequency, and it sounds like they're breathing in and breathing out while they're purring. And then you had to get the feel to synchronize with the sound the way you do with a real cat. And so it took a couple of years going back and forth, really? Tinkering, trying to come up with something. And we finally got it, and we were really excited about it. But the frequencies are very low. And so what we're working on now is trying to make it where we can actually increase the volume. But when you make it louder, I don't know what's going on. It doesn't sound as real. So I'm not really pleased yet with the second generation of product. But the first one, if it's used the way it's intended to be used in a quiet environment, sounds and feels as close to a cat as any product can be made at the moment, unless there's a genius out there that can help me figure out how to do it better.
I think the key there was that you connected with somebody that had the electronic skill that also liked cats, because people were, while there's folks that likes cats and dogs, generally people are either dog people or cat people, one of the two. And then never the twain shall meet.
And I don't mean to overgeneralize, but for some reason there are more men who understand electronics, but most of them don't like cats, or at least the ones I've met. So it was hard to find the combination, but Larry knew exactly what I wanted, and we came up with the electronics that reproduced the sound and feel of a real cat.
Now, before you found Larry, what were you doing? Were you just calling up random people? Like, how did you even know who to even begin the search?
Well, my cousin is an industrial designer,
mm-hmm.
so he had some ideas of people I could talk with.
Right, in the right
area.
Right. And so then you started just cold calling them, or he had some contacts?
Well, I would be introduced to them. Mm-hmm. And then I had a friend who is a computer wizard who's into ham radio, and we kind of tinkered with that. The computer chip alone doesn't do it because it didn't provide the feel.
Right. You need that vibration, right?
Yeah. So you can't really just use a computer chip.
Right.
And when I went into production, everybody, you know, all the manufacturing facilities, well, where's the sound chip? There's not a sound chip. You can't do it with a sound chip. So people had a hard time understanding that this was a little bit more complicated to make work than
right, than you would think.
Than you would think.
Right, because nobody's really gone through this much trouble before, right? They were just doing it the cheapest, easiest way, and you were trying to make it actually be realistic.
Yes. That's exactly right.
So the result
at a cost effect, you know, right. And still be cost effective.
Sure.
Which has also been
so. You were able to find something that was not cost effective that did a good job.
No, not yet. I knew there was no point in
attempting
going
that
far,
right.
Because I knew people weren't going to pay $200 for
right.
stuff.
No, you'd be surprised.
Well, would they? Yeah, well, I've seen. We're in products. I see people charging.
Right, you get some real cashmere or something real nice fabric. You throw the cat.
It's all in the marketing.
Exactly,
that's what it comes down to.
You get the premium item.
It's amazing.
Well, you know, as good as the search engines are on the internet, I doubt if you typed in there that you want an electronics expert with a minor in cat purring that you could have come up with zero.
Right. And then there's a thing called the Thomas Register,
sure.
where right. you find manufacturing facilities that make these kind of things. And I could never find anybody that really was interested in even talking to me about it. They would say there are already things like that on the market. A lot of people would say, well, they already have that. Because they just assume that the fur real kitty or something like that did what I was trying to get at.
Right.
So
interesting. So how did you protect your idea to keep other people from stealing it while you were doing the prototype?
Well, anybody I talked to about the idea had to sign a confidentiality agreement. And I had a patent attorney draft a form agreement, and I would just switch out the names. And so I kept up with all of that. No one got to know anything about my idea without signing a confidentiality agreement. And then when I took prototypes to Toy Fair a couple of years ago, that's when we finally had to apply for a provisional patent that would protect me for a year before I could release the idea and show all the big companies what I had come up with.
So were you looking, when you went to Toy Fair, were you exhibiting or were you looking to license the idea?
No, I was an exhibitor. I had been told by my first agent that I could have them in production and sell them. And that first agent couldn't get the factory that he was using to make them the way I wanted to. So we were delayed a little bit in manufacturing. But I had a lot of orders. I told people that this is a prototype. I will keep you posted. And I had orders the first day of Toy Fair.
Wow. And your factory.
Is that unusual?
I was told it's unusual.
It depends on who the orders are coming from. If, Walmart, Target walk in and want to order, that's very unusual.
Right.
If it's, small.
Walmart did want me to keep them posted on the progress. Mm-hmm. And then I did have a request for a quote on a 50,000 order, which I knew I couldn't fill. There was no way to fill it.
Now, is the factory that you're using overseas?
Yes.
Okay. Now, are you currently exhibiting at shows or for 2010?
No, I'm going to pass up on going to Toy Fair this year. I have some inventory, and I'm selling through catalogs. And I'm working currently with another agent to improve the electronics to try to work on the volume control. So I thought, rather than produce another run at this time with the older electronics, I would try to improve the electronics.
I'm a little surprised that, although I know what you're trying to do with the PER is unique, that you're having such a hard time. I tend to think that, I'm saying this, to Ron and out loud, but that, we must know plenty of people between us in this business that could either help or get you to the help you need. I mean, it's like you said, people build rocket ships and do all kinds of things. How hard can it be to get a product that would simulate a purring sound and feel?
Yeah. I don't know. We had Kim Babchick on the show a couple of weeks ago, and she's a QVC rep.
A QVC wanted to sell some on QVC, too.
Yeah, I don't know how this thing would present, on TV, of how you would actually communicate, the purring,
They have good audio. They'll get it down.
Okay.
Well, the first run has been a sample run, and I invite comments and suggestions. And the biggest comment, particularly from the senior citizens, has been they want volume control. Now, I don't know that kids want volume control. If they have it in the bedroom at night, it's perfectly loud enough. If it's used the way it's supposed to be used, it works fine. I think it's the parents who want it.
They do, because I think that, if my kids had it, they'd use it maybe when they're sleeping. But they'd also, if they like it and it's fun, they're going to want to walk around the house with it during the day, morning. And I think having that volume control from a parent perspective, you're right. They would want it. The kids probably, if they knew it could be turned up, they'd turn it up.
But an unintended consequence of doing this was you found seniors as being a market for you, right?
Absolutely.
And then they may want the volume control because their hearing is not as good as a young child.
Right. So we're just now getting the feedback, and we're just now starting on the volume control. And I got an audio of the new product the other day, and they're shipping it to me, so I haven't seen it in person, but on the computer it didn't sound the way I wanted it to sound.
Yeah, and one thing you might consider is to add maybe the meow, because the seniors can hear the higher frequencies better, and to keep the volume the same on the purring. I don't know.
Okay.
Something to think about.
Now, Vivian, what's the suggested retail price for one of them?
Well, I let each retailer pick their own price. And I was told by my consultant that I cannot sell on my website at a lower price than any of my retailers.
That is true.
So I sell through several catalogs, and I understand that they charge varying prices.
Well, it's really up to you to decide what the price should be and what's called an MSRP.
Well, this is the first run. As soon as I can get the cost of the product under control, I'll do that. Like I said, this is the first run, and it's a test run.
So what are, you said there are some catalogs that are selling it. Mm-hmm. What are they selling it for?
Well, one sells it for $49.
Okay.
And I think one of the senior catalogs sells it in the 30s.
Okay.
Like $39.
Interesting.
Yeah. And do you have a fulfillment house or do you?
I have a warehouse.
Okay.
So when we get orders, we send the purchase orders over to the warehouse and the warehouse fills
them.
The order.
And the warehouse here in Atlanta?
It's in Atlanta.
Okay, so that's close.
It's close. I needed it to be close in case there were any issues with the first run. At some point, I'm told that I probably should warehouse in the Midwest because it's cheaper for shipping purposes.
Well, I mean, yes and no. I mean, often when you start dealing with bigger retailers and catalogers, they will have distribution centers all over the country. So it,
oh, well, that would be when I would be selling, you know, FOB Shanghai or...
Yeah, well, right, when you're getting container loads of cats.
Hurrying cats.
That's the best deal. But, yeah. You know, I think when I think of this, I think of... I mean, obviously, that you said there are two markets. And for me, I see the kids market as a tremendous market. And then, of course, you have the what we'll call the senior citizen market, the people that really would desire something like this. But, you know, from a marketing perspective, if this were mine, I'm thinking, you know, how do I package it? I mean, because it's hard to sell something to everybody, you know, in this category. And I think, is it packaged like a toy, or is it packaged more like a
pet?
Yeah, or something that's more, you know, adult-themed. And that, you know, it will present it the big challenge. I mean, I talk to all the major toy chains and catalogs. I have a lot of children's products clients. And walk into a toy store, it's all about the package. I mean,
I hired a company in New York to design the package, and that was one of the issues. Because I realized the first toy fair when I took the prototypes, I was getting questions from special needs groups. I was getting questions from toy stores, and I was getting questions from seniors, and I'm thinking, how do I package all this?
Yeah.
Because I've got to try to keep the cost down, and I can't do separate runs with different packaging.
No, you can't.
So right. The consultant suggested using a company in New York, and they did the design, and the goal of their design was sort of to be both children and seniors. And I, you know, I'll take feedback on that as well.
Yeah, that's I would never suggest that, because it's, you know, one of the curses of what a lot of good inventors do is they believe their product should be marketed to everybody. And what happens is when you go to retail, like when I call on a toy store, they want toys. They don't want something that is packaged generically for everybody. They need to sell, you know, if they're going to take somebody off their shelves and put your product in there, it's got to be appropriate. It's got to look good. It's got to be attractive. Kids have to like the package, and parents have to feel like the package is packaged for children, even though they're the ones making the purchase. But it's the old saying, you've got to pick your market, and you've got to go after it. It's not to say that you can't sell to kids and to seniors, but if you're going to have an outward packaging play, you got to pick your market. I can't see how the kids market wouldn't be a primary source. Toys, interactive toys like this, if you will. It's plush.
And you mentioned special needs. You know, both children and adults that have terminal illnesses, would this would your invention be appropriate for them?
It complies with the Consumer Product Safety Improvement Act, so I'm sure it would be.
because you know, it gives comfort. And I would think that somebody that's got cancer, you know, or something like that, that this would be...
Donate those, you know. Mm-hmm.
It's a good PR opportunity.
Yep.
Okay. I received a nice thank you note from a lady who gave one to a little girl who didn't have cancer. Her little brother did, but she had to give up a real cat.
You know what might be interesting? You know that shoe store, that shoe company, that every time they buy a pair of shoes, a pair is donated to, like, some African...
Is it Zappos?
No, I think it might be called Tom's. I'm not sure the
Tom's
name.
Tom's of Maine. You know.
It's something like that, but it might be something that with every, you know, so that way the child, when they're involved, they're also donating one to a special needs child or something like that.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, St. Jude, some of these big, you know, prominent hospitals.
Right.
That, you know,
and then you benefit from the public relations value of that, plus you're helping more kids, and then plus you're letting the kid... Like how they used to do with the Cabbage Patch Kids, where you're adopting it became like more emotionally connected to it.
Yeah, because you mentioned that the girl had a brother that she had to give up her cat because he was had an illness.
That was what the thank you note said.
Okay, well,
right. So that's powerful. I mean, there's opportunities to build community around this whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, the products that when I talked to, you know, just this week I must have spoken to, you know, most of the big chain buyers because I have clients with children's products, and you know, I guess they just get sick and tired of seeing the same old thing, and they want interactive things. It's kind of like the Club Penguin mentality, where people they want where you can buy a product, go online, interact with the pet. They want some kind of further connection because it's more dollars for them, and there's more of a revenue stream, you know, versus just walking in with like one SKU, just saying I've got one toy. But it, you know, those things work too. But it really will come down to your packaging, your marketing. And having multiple SKUs, multiple choices. If you just have, like, say, two styles, a lot of retailers are going to say, we need you to take up more shelf space. We need six different colors. We need mama cat and baby cat. I mean, they want more from you because, again, they got to remove a vendor that's already buying, and they're going to want somebody who's going to, you know, make a presence.
Now, isn't this a trap, I would guess, for people that are kind of new in this, is that you have a primary, like, children here, and then you have this other one that's attractive, the seniors, and then you have maybe special needs, and you got to kind of pick one, like you said, and they want to do for everybody. So how do you coach them, Jim, in this area? Do you tell them, like, look, you got to just go with one, you know, aim for the kids first, and then we'll pick up these other markets later?
That's what I would do. I would pick your niche, go after it, and really put everything you've got into that niche. But, you know, I think of MP3 players, how that whole market is always a good example of how, you know, Apple came out with, you know, their standard player,
right?
And then they created, like, the Nanos and all the little shuffles and all the things that were really more geared towards children. Just a different look, different style, different price point, of course. You know, I'm not going to give my kids a $300 MP3 player, but I'll give them a $50 one. And there's a lot of thinking behind that. They're not just pushing products out the door. They actually attack a niche, and most big brands do, and then they see the other opportunities and create a product line around that. So I think the look and feel of your product, I mean, on the whole, it's got to be the same. I mean, it's still got to have that same purring sound, and the core is there, but, you know, the child product may be look and package completely different than what
the senior product might be.
The senior package.
Right.
And then you get more legs with the product down the road. But, you know, I could just tell you that when you go to these toy chains and catalogers, that they want toys, whether they're helpful, interactive, soothing, or not. They're in business to sell toys, make money, turn dollars. That's it. That's all they care about. So I hate to say most buyers aren't going to care that it really is going to help a child, and unless you get a buyer that you connect with that has kids and have cats. But they're, what, 80 million cat owner or cats,
yeah,
or something? So there's a good shot you're going to get a cat owner.
That's right. True.
But it's sad because that's the business.
No, retail, I understand, you know, that part. I understand, yeah, that part.
Yeah, and you said that you were patent pending for a while, and then you, I'm assuming you filed a non-provisional. What's the status of your patent protection? Is it still patent pending, or is it patent issued?
It's patent pending.
Okay. And it's going to take a while. Well, I know that if you remember the Furby from many years ago, the Furby got both a utility patent for the animatronics inside, but it also got a design patent on the way that the Furby looked, because it didn't want anybody making anything that just kind of looked like the Furby. So I'm assuming that you just filed the utility for the functionality.
Just the utility.
Okay.
Is there a trademark on that? I'm sorry. Is there a trademark on that?
On Furby?
On Furby.
Oh, yeah.
Do you have trademarked
on Catnap, yeah, Kitties, yes.
Good, okay.
Yeah, that's cool.
Because I like the name. That's a cool, yeah, name, Catnap Kitties.
Do you have a long-term exit strategy as far as being acquired by Mattel or something like that?
Well, my understanding is that you have to prove that you have a market,
right,
before one of the majors will pick it up. So I think with catalog sales from this season, just in September, I've got a product that people want.
Right.
I've just got to figure out the rest of the story.
Right.
And no, I haven't thought that far in advance. Well, I have a day job, too.
I understand completely.
So well, yeah, you won't need one if Mattel comes knocking at you.
That's right.
The payouts there are probably, right, you know, pretty nice.
Well, no, I'm told that the licensing fee is like 5% or something like that.
Yeah, that's a whole other conversation about, you know, that's why I asked you in the beginning what you want to do.
And I was also warned that sometimes they'll buy up your rights and never go to market,
sure,
with the product.
Right.
They'll shelve it.
That's been done.
I think you're doing, if you've got the means and the ability, I've always been a fan. I've done both licensing and bringing products to market myself. And there's a lot more risk doing it yourself, but there's a lot more reward.
You're absolutely right.
Plus, you keep control of things that mean something to you. You could take your idea to Mattel, and they're going to change the purse sound. They're going to change the look. They're going to change the name. They're going to do everything they want because you're assigning the rights of the product to them. And then all of a sudden, you may get upset that, look, you know, here's my Catnap Kitty. It's not, now it's, you know,
right, it's something else.
Something,
and they don't care if it's cheaper, you know, and all that.
No,
stuff.
I understand. Yeah. I understand. They're making money, and I'm probably not the best of business people because I'm trying to make a product that people want.
No, but see, your heart's in the right place, and if you've got a product that really works well, then again, it just comes down to the marketing part. And that's something that, you know, you don't have to be an expert in. There's plenty of people to help you.
But you've done the hard part.
Yeah. And this, it's not unusual, though, to hear, although it is a little unusual to think that you can't find somebody to help you get the purring down. But it is normal for people. I've had a couple of clients that have had products where they had chips inside, where they were sound chips, and they spent a year just working on getting the right sound, the length of the sound, the frequency. And it is definitely not an easy thing. And if you're really particular about it, you want it to be right.
It's going to take some time.
It does take time. So, but once you get past that, I think you'll probably feel better and knowing that everything else can sort of come together for you.
Yeah. So any advice that you have for inventors trying to bring their design to market, things that they need to consider?
They need to consider the cost. I just did not know how expensive it was going to be.
Right.
And they just need to be prepared to, it's not going to happen overnight. You have to work hard, start out very small, because you've got to make sure the factory is making it the way you approved it. And if there are any glitches, you don't want a huge run. You want to make sure it's being made properly and the way you want it made. You have to consider the Consumer Product Safety Improvement Act and all the legal requirements and the testing, and that drives up the cost because you have to do it.
Right.
And it's fun, but it's expensive and it's a lot of risk.
Yeah, you know, the American Bar Association has produced a pamphlet on inventions, and they say that one of the common mistakes for inventors is they seriously underestimate how long it's going to take and how much money it's going to take to get their invention to market.
Yeah, you know, on my forms, when I get a new client, one of my questions is, do you have any idea how much it costs to bring a product to market? And it's funny sometimes the answers that people will put. Some people put like $1 million, and I'm like, all right, let's not get carried away. But usually people well underestimate the costs, the time. And it is something that it's almost defeating being in this business to tell people when they first call me to say, listen, you know, are you really ready to do this? Well, what do you mean? I got a great product. Look, you're going to get a lot of rejection. It's an up and down. It's a roller coaster. It's frustrating. It's annoying. It's long. It's expensive. You're going to spend three times as much as you think. Oh, you know, but I have a good idea. You know, all of a sudden they're getting upset. I'm like, I just want you to know what you're getting into, because this is not, people think it's a hobby, and you know, or it just becomes an expensive hobby if you don't follow the rules and do things the way you're doing it, where you're doing your safety testing and you're getting your good patent advice and all those things.
They're expensive.
Come with a cost,
I launched in a recession. So,
yeah. Well, look, if you can get this kind of reaction in this environment, then it can only mean good things for you going forward. So, I think they're cool. I you know, obviously there's a big market, and you know, it looks like you're doing everything carefully and in a way that I wish more inventors would do them, and that is follow the steps and
That's
do
right.
it right.
Well, I think a lot of people are worried that if they don't get it out there right now, somebody's going to steal the idea.
Right, they'll miss it.
Yeah, but you can mess up the opportunity if you don't do it right.
That's correct.
Well, yeah, you can't go back to retailers after you've screwed up and say, well, you know, I want to try again. They won't do it. They will not do it. So I've seen that. I've, you know, been a part of that. I've seen it happen to so many people where they rush it and the quality's poor. It upsets retailers quite a bit when they get a lot of returns and then they mm-hmm. got to pull you off the shelf and then they have this empty spot. It's bad for business. It really is.
That's true. But if our listening audience wants to order some of these catnip kitties, how do they do that?
Well, if you Google catnip kitties, you'll get a lot of different websites that are carrying them, mm-hmm. and you can just pick your price.
Oh, that sounds good.
But your website is Catnap Kitties, KITTIES, just in case people weren't sure about that one, .com, so they can go there.
Can go there and purchase, of course.
That's the best place to go.
And then does that show them where the other places are?
No, we don't have a list of other retailers on the website. Mm-hmm. But they can order off of our website, and they're shipped directly from the warehouse here in Atlanta. Or they can order, you know, if you Google Catnap Kitties, you'll find several people who sell them.
I'm sure you will.
Excellent.
Okay, well, Vivian, really appreciate you coming in.
Well,
and,
thanks for having
sharing
me.
With us.
And thanks for the advice.
Yeah, this is a really nice product, and I'll be ordering one for my aunt up in Tennessee.
Nice. There you go. Customer right on the spot.
Boom.
Nice.
Great.
Okay, well, this has been another exciting issue of Launch with our producer, Lee Cantor, and my co-host, Jim DeBetta.